Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already today, you know we consider that a sign of high intelligence. And so congratulations on that accomplishment. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And I don't even want to think about what we do without Joan. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Hello there.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Is Capitol Hill just imploding? I mean, I'm trying to imagine. Remember when they were watching, Mount St. Helens for like a month or so? You know, the seismologists had gotten the indications there were rumblings down below, and they were actually telling people leave the area. This thing's going to blow. And remember that? And some people didn't, and they died. And it certainly did blow. What was it, about 25 or 6 years ago, 81, yeah, something like that? And the thing did blow, and it took down a bunch of people. I get the feeling that the people out in the Rockies, you know, where they, is it Colorado that they have all this information? I get the feeling that they're saying, you know, is there a volcano in Washington? I didn't know that.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I just emailed a friend of mine and said, even for someone like myself, you know, a cynical old journalist who's been,
yes,
you know, I came here as a child. I've been here for 25 years, so I came here as a child,
a mere child. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I wish. This is stunning. The Republican leadership seems to be kind of, it seems to be every man or person for themselves right now.
Yeah, when I saw what's the leader's name, from Ohio,
Ohio.
Anyway, when I saw the guy who took DeLay's place.
John Boehner.
Boehner is what, yes, I couldn't get out. Boehner. When I saw him saying, you know, don't look at me, look at the speaker, I said, uh-oh.
And also Congressman Reynolds from New York, who said, people were pointing fingers at Congressman Reynolds, and he said, no, wait, I went and I told the speaker about this. So
right,
everybody is, like I said, is sort of wanting to make sure they protect themselves. And then the chief of staff to Mr. Reynolds, who resigned, was going to, I guess, kind of stay in the background, but he claims that other people were trying to point fingers at him, so this is why he came forward yesterday and said, hey, I was telling people 3 years ago.
Well, and see, here's the thing. Here's my question, Joan. And, of course, we're talking about the Foley case.
Right.
The Congressman Mark Foley case from Florida and all the improper behavior that he's had over the last several years, apparently, with pages. Apparently, the guy was notorious. Apparently, he was infamous.
Yeah.
And it was like part of the indoctrination paperwork when you came in as a page. Watch out for Congressman Foley.
Yes.
But the thing is, Joan, you know, I want to ask both sides of the aisle, what did you know and when did you know it?
Exactly.
Not just the Republicans.
But why not just the Republicans?
Well, because the Democrats knew about this too, apparently, a while back, or had access to it. And now listen, my comments now are totally bipartisan. And by that I mean, Joan, when I talk about this eruption that I'm talking about, I don't think the eruption, you know, when St. Helens blasted off and hurt all those people and created all that damage, it was no respecter of persons.
Right, but that's a natural disaster. This
exactly,
is a political disaster.
Well, but I think it will also be no respecter of parties. I see this.
Well, but the Democrats don't run Congress.
No. Well, okay. No. I'm not talking about the leadership. I'm just saying that this is not good. All of this business is not good for anybody. and Republicans. It's not going to be good for Republicans or Democrats.
Well, that may be true, but one of the reasons the Democrats ended up out of favor in 94 was that all the fingers were pointed at them saying they can't govern, can't run the place.
I agree.
So I think turnabout is coming, and people are saying that the Republicans are having trouble running the place.
I don't disagree with you, but what I'm getting at is none of them are being seen in very... I mean, look at their poll ratings. Look at their polling numbers. I mean,
right.
This. What I'm getting at, Joan, is this kind of a low regard for our politicians. It's coming to what may be a new low,
it could be.
I don't think that's good for our democracy.
No, not at all.
That's my point. I'm not saying the Republicans or Democrats, one is better than the other. Whatever. I'm just saying that it's the kind of. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I know this. I know some pretty strong partisans on both sides of the aisle who are pretty much fed up with a whole lot of them.
It is interesting, though, because they're not all, but many Republicans have, especially very conservative Republicans, have tried to paint the Republican Party as the party of values and tried to paint the Democrats as devoid of values. And I think that's going to come back to bite them now.
Well, it may. And of course, Joan, how much is all politics is local going to play into this thing?
Well, that's what I wonder, too.
In a month.
Yeah, right. Right. That's always very important.
And the thing is there, you know, is there any doubt in your mind that there are other shoes waiting to drop, and maybe not just on the Republicans?
Well, you never know. But
it's like Chamberlain said, you know, when he was asked in 39, what's going to be the outcome of the election? What will it depend upon? And he said, events, my dear boy.
And this is a big one.
The stock market doesn't care about any of this, Joan.
Apparently not. Well, you know, remember, we should do a little economics 101 here. The stock market is a leading indicator. It's not a reflector of what's going on right now.
Right.
When we say leading indicator, it's sort of a little hint of what's to come, so that's pretty good news.
Yeah, and so what is the stock market saying? And we say the stock market. I mean, the stock market is doing well, but a lot of times we incorrectly say the stock market, and we really mean the Dow Jones Industrial.
Right, we don't mean every single stock. The bellwether 30 industrials, which change from time to time.
And what happened this week, Joan?
Broke a record more than once.
Yeah.
I think. I've been so busy with political news, I'm not paying attention.
I predicted this 2 years ago, and I knew if I kept predicting it long enough, it would happen.
Right. It would finally prove you right.
I did. I predicted it 2 years in a row, and it didn't happen. And then last year, I gave up, and it did happen. So, anyway.
That's funny.
Yeah, it broke over 17... Was it 17? I mean, I'm sorry, 11.722 was the record previously. 11.722, and it broke that twice, I think, this week. Stand by, Joan. Quick break. We got more to come. We got to talk about some of those stocks right after these messages with our good friend Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassingame.
That's right. Turn the microphone. Say that last just as the time bell rings.
The Godfather, ladies and gentlemen.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
Didn't get any better than James Brown.
So good.
Unless it's Joan Pride, that would be better, wouldn't it? Joan, can you scream? Can you give me a little...
Ow! That's probably the best I can do.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
I'm surprised you even tried. I'm impressed.
Me too. Now my throat hurts. I can't talk anymore. You'll have to carry the rest of the show.
Only on the Small Business Advocate Show, folks, do you get Joan Pride doing a James Brown.
I should get paid extra for that.
Doing a James Brown impression. That's going to go down as one of our highlight reels, Joan. Yeah, when we do the roast, when we roast Joan, we're old and decrepit, Joan, I'll bring that up again.
Thank you.
Okay, so the stock market, the Dow Jones Industrial Average hit a new record. It would be better, Joan, if the S&P and the NASDAQ both had hit records. The NASDAQ's still down big percentages over where its high was, but its high in the year 2000, Joan, was an artificial high, wasn't it?
It was an artificial high.
Over 5,000.
Oh, right.
In 2000,
right.
It was...
You're back in the...
The NASDAQ. I'm talking about the
you're
NASDAQ.
You're back in the tech bubble.
Work with me, Joan. We're going to the bonus round.
It's hard.
Pick up the pace here. NASDAQ was over 5,000, like 5,500 6 years ago. And now it's just, what, barely 2,500, something like that? I've forgotten exactly.
Oh, yeah. That's
so it's
why
off,
it's called a bubble.
It's off by a lot. Exactly. And the Dow didn't bubble that much. But the S&P is a broader index. And it was like 500 stocks?
The S&P 500, right.
Yeah, there you go. That's the reason they call it the S&P 500.
It's
and
a coincidence.
So it's a broader index, and it's up, but it's not back at the record. But still, Joan, this is good news for the economy, isn't it?
Oh, no question about it, yeah.
Now, you guys, what is Kiplinger like in terms of these stocks? Don't you guys have a prediction? I mean, you have a preference, don't you?
Well, we see more gains in stocks ahead. We're saying the bullish momentum will kind of slow down just a little bit, but we say a double-digit gain for this year. And so that's pretty good because we haven't had double-digit gains for a while, you know, year over year.
Mm-hmm. But I'm surprised to see you make this comment, Joan Kiplinger. We're partial to large company stocks. That surprised me a little bit to see you guys say that.
I don't know.
Well, many of those prices look like bargains compared to stocks of smaller companies. I'm a little surprised to see Kiplinger say that. And I know you didn't make that. You didn't make that entry yourself. But that was a little surprising. You guys, now here's an interesting one. You guys say that we should allocate about a fourth of our portfolio to foreign companies.
Yeah, that's interesting. That seems a little high, but we think that we must think that global growth is going to be pretty strong.
Do you know who first said that, Joan? Who first made that? Not the 25%, but who first said invest in foreign stocks? You know who first did that?
You.
No. I'm not. I don't do stocks. And
Warren Buffett.
No, actually, before him, Sir John Templeton.
Oh.
Back in, I think, the 50s, Sir John Templeton. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, he basically one of the ways he became a very wealthy man was investing in foreign stocks, and he's been pretty consistent in that over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I think in talking about investing in foreign stocks. So that's something that's been going on for a long time. And, you know, I wonder about the average American investor, they probably, if they want foreign stocks, Joan, they probably need to invest in a stock fund, a foreign stock fund.
Well, exactly. Like, we're not saying that was one thing that you bring up a good point. I wanted to clarify. We're not saying run out and try to pick a foreign stock. We are mentioning that certain funds that invest only in foreign stocks are probably good buys right now.
Right. Are CDs paying 5% now, Joan?
Hard to believe because they were paying almost nothing a while back.
Like
there.
Zip, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize CDs were up to 5%. Not that I would have any, you know, but I didn't realize they'd gone up there. That's pretty good.
Right. But now, it's for a one-year investment. So if you're talking 3 or 6 month CD, I don't think you're going to get that.
Well, most people who have the ability to put money into a CD, a year is not that long. You know,
that's
3 to 5
yeah.
years. That's when you got it. That's when you get run into problems. But
right.
But that's pretty darn good. So you know, one of the reasons why, Joan, and you guys point this out, that the stock market might be doing better, is that people are less inclined to think about about real estate as an investment, especially residential real estate.
Right, and this is kind of the mirror image of what happened a few years ago when the stock market was going downhill. People started gravitating toward real estate, and now the pendulum is swinging the other way. And as you probably know, the Fed chairman, Mr. Bernanke, came out yesterday and said, no big surprise, but clarified and confirmed that there's a major correction going on in the housing market.
Hmm. A major correction. I still don't
I think
like
he said, excuse me, I think he said significant correction, but
okay,
that's pretty
right.
similar.
I still don't like that kind of talk.
Well, have you told him?
I defer to his, he's a smart guy, and he's obviously got a little bit more a lofty pulpit than I do, Joan. But I'll tell you, I don't know what ball game that he and the other folks who talk about a real estate bubble, what they're watching now. If they're talking about people who finance their put a you know, borrowed money on a second mortgage, adjustable rate mortgages, and they were barely hanging on before, you know, so that they could get some equity out of their house, and they spent the money. Okay, yeah. I see that maybe is a problem, but that's not a real estate bubble. That's not what that is. And I just don't see it, especially when you talk about it being a national real estate bubble. I still don't see it. Stand by, Joan. Quick break. When we come back, folks, we're going to talk about the Kiplinger Energy Forecast. Very interesting. Stay with us. Break the silence.
Damn. You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, your energy forecast is very interesting. It's this handy-dandy little box that they put in their letter.
Yep, on it's kind of pretty, page. Too. It's got a couple of shades of blue, and I like it.
Whatever. And so it's got good information in it, folks. I don't know about the pretty stuff, but anyway, I do like, I'm glad that you have, that you, a few years ago, you added color to your letter. But anyway, back to the meat of the topic. By the way, folks, every letter on the first page has a forecast like this about something. It's very handy, very, very intuitive, and very, very easy to read. Let's talk about crude oil. Now, Joan, crude is currently, isn't it below $62?
I think it might. I thought it was around 59 or 60.
Yeah, it's dropped since this came out. Dropped a couple of bucks, actually.
Yeah, because now, see, this, the letter, you know, these...
Came out on
these,
Friday.
Okay, so you figure that the reporters who were making the calls and putting these numbers in did that just about a week ago.
Right.
So you
can
see how things change in just 1 week.
Exactly. Now... So it's down to it's, you say 62 currently, it's down to probably about 59 or so. You're saying it'll be January $60, so apparently unchanged, but certainly it looks like it's going to stay in the you know, below 60 for a while. But you're saying it's going to go back up next year. Now, is that because of the driving, but the summer pricing, or what do you think?
I don't know, but I would suspect so. I mean, it always does blip up a little bit during the summer months.
Natural gas is going up in January. That'll be because of the winter months, probably.
Right.
But then by next summer, be back down to below where it is now. That's pretty good news.
Yeah.
Gasoline is, you know, Joan, I'm seeing gasoline in many parts of the country right now. Very close to, you know, 87 octane regular, very close to $2 a gallon.
Well, I heard a rumor about gas stations around here out in the boondocks, but still maybe just a hair below $2.
Yeah. So that's good news, isn't it?
It's great news.
It sounds like, and I asked Steve Forbes about this the other day, and he basically indicated that the speculators moved on to other things.
They must have.
And if you remember, Joan, we talked about this a year more ago, that if we could just get the speculators out of the, you know, the supply and demand quotient or element of the price of oil was going to be enough to hold the price up. If we could just get the speculators to go mess around with beans or something. And it seems like that's what they've done.
Well, and I can remember gas was, there was a point back there when, you know, gas started climbing from 150 to 175 to 2, and it kind of climbed pretty gradually up into the low 2s, and then suddenly overnight it seemed it was 3. It seemed to go from about 220 to 3 in no time, and I think that part of it, that was sort of the icing for the speculators. That was the, you know, the last part of it.
Well, I wonder, Joan, if you know, one thing I've never said about the speculators, I've never said that they weren't smart. I didn't like them being in the gas market because it was running the price up, but I never said they weren't smart. So if a lot of the reason why people think speculators were running the price of oil up, of gasoline up, was because of the unrest in the Middle East. As much as it still seems to be heated up over there, do they now know something we don't know yet? See what I mean? Are they, have they quit being worried about, or do they quit seeing opportunity in the volatility of oil prices?
Well, you know, during the war with Hezbollah and Israel, I kind of wondered if this was a precursor to, you know, an explosion of violence in the Middle East. But then that kind of calmed down. And maybe with that, you know, because you thought, well, are Iran and Syria going to get involved directly, not just indirectly? Is the U.S. going to come in? Is it going to just be a big, huge mess? And things have settled down, and maybe that's what's changing their minds.
There is one thing that's a little bit sick, though, Jonah. We've talked about this before. It's a little bit demented. It's a little bit dysfunctional. It's a little bit nauseating, in fact, to think that you and I are tickled pink that gasoline prices might approach $2 a gallon.
Wow, $2. That's great.
Well, I mean, we feel like Santa Claus has dropped in on us, don't we?
Right.
Holy mackerel. I mean,
but, you know, we didn't do, and I'm not saying that anybody should feel sorry for the oil industry, but if you think of the states that depend on oil, and you think of how difficult things were in the oil patch when gas was at 99 cents a gallon,
you
kind of have to look at it that way as well.
Absolutely. Stand by, Joan. We'll come back. We're going to talk about a lot of other things. We want to move on and talk about the economy. We're going to talk about the cost of technology. We're going to talk about human resources and some other good things right after these messages with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, the letter comes out weekly. Now in your 84th year.
Wow.
The Kiplinger letter. And you can get it by snail mail, folks, on Monday. You can get it by email on Friday. And I encourage you to check it out. And you can do that at their website, kiplinger.com. And then you got these other publications, Joan, that are outstanding, the biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter.
You bet.
And then there's a magazine. Tell us about that.
Right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And why don't you crank out that phone number?
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
I like telling people about Kiplinger, folks. For one reason, you can subscribe with a 30-day free trial. And if you don't like it, you just tell them no, and they won't charge you for it in any of their publications, because I just like the work that they do. And folks, when you subscribe, you also have access to all of the research and the data, the more detailed information that they produce that's in the back of their website that you need to be a subscriber to get to. And you can get to that during the free trial period, can't you, Joan?
Oh, no question.
So I hope you'll check that out when you get a chance. Joan, let's move over and talk about the economy. You guys say that factory output is going to grow next year by 3%, but that's half of this year's increase. So what's going on with that?
Well, and this is also something that the Fed chairman and others have been talking about, and there have been indicators out, you know, economic reports saying that factory output is slowing. And manufacturers just are adjusting their systems to the slower growth in the economy. So it's nothing to be panicked about.
Right. You know, Joan, speaking of manufacturing, one of the things that I've been excited about, and I may have mentioned this once or twice in the past, is as I travel around and meet with small business owners and speak to small business groups around the country over the years, I'm seeing an increase in small manufacturing. I'm meeting lots of people. When I asked them what they do, they said, well, I have a little small manufacturing company. And Joan, guess what? Several of them are startups.
Wow.
I've met a number of them that took a 20th century model and converted it into, they were still manufacturing, but they were doing it with 21st century models and customer approaches and products. I mean, they took an idea that was good in the 20th century and morphed it into something that would work in the 21st century. And it's so exciting to see that. And that's the face of manufacturing in America, Joan. It's not General Motors. It's the little guys out there.
Can you generalize at all about what they're manufacturing, or is it just all across the board?
They're doing small parts. Many of them are not doing end products. They're doing OEMs, I guess you'd call it. They're doing doing little bitty parts for larger manufacturers. Maybe
okay.
They're shipping them to another country for manufacturing.
Wow.
But it's a lot of different things. Some of it is, some of it is 20th century. I've met one woman who bought a foundry. Now the foundry,
wow.
The foundry business is virtually history in America.
I'm going to say it's foundering.
Yes, it's gone.
Sorry.
But she bought a foundry and she's
wow.
making it work.
Wow.
So, manufacturing, folks, is not dead in America. It's just changed. It looks
kind of nice to know.
Well, and see what happens. The reason I bring that up, Joan, is I want to encourage communities to stop spending a lot of money chasing the next big car plant.
Or the next, interesting.
And try that if you want, but don't overlook the opportunity for homegrown manufacturing.
Provide some seed corn for your own folks
exactly.
to start small businesses, and you'll still get tax revenues.
Thank you, because these are people that are going to employ 20, 30 employees maybe. Maybe 50 employees.
You get more bang for your buck. Your incentives aren't going to be the same as you would to lure a huge auto plant.
And let's don't forget, Joan, I've mentioned this before, the paper mill that 10 years ago took 800 employees today takes 400 employees because of technology.
The technology, right.
So when you look for that big plant, you may not get the big bang employee opportunity
right.
because of technology.
Yeah, that's true.
So look, hunt the elephants if you want, but hunt the rabbits too. They may be.
Did you just make that up?
No, I've been saying this for a long time. They may be right under your nose.
Yeah.
But you can use it, Joan. You can use that.
Thank you.
The price for IT, Joan, you say is coming down on several fronts.
Yes, a whole bunch of different things.
And what, data storage is one of them?
Yeah, this is an all-in-one data storage unit. I guess it backs up multiple servers. And we're saying it's going to be less than $5,000 and be as easy to install as a printer. I can't even believe that. But it would be nice.
When I started buying storage, Joan, hard drive storage, back
right.
about maybe almost 20 years ago, it was $100. I remember when it got down to $100 per megabyte. That meant a 10-megabyte drive was $1,000. Today, you can buy a 1-gigabyte thumb drive for $59.
Mm.
So that's what's happened. This is all good news. Joan, on the other hand, you say the internet domain names, when you register a domain name, that's going to go up a little bit.
Right, because the Commerce Department beginning next year is going to allow increases of about 5% for domain names.
Right. Yeah, and so, but they're still a good deal, folks. I mean, you can get them for like $20 a year.
That's
in some
bad.
Places. Yeah. Stand by, quick break. We got some more stuff to come right after these messages with our good friend Joan Pride. Some small business stuff we're going to get into right after these messages.
You're not shy.
Welcome back. It's 7 till the hour, 53 after. That's how that works. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Joan Pride is our guest. And Joan, you got quite a bit of small business stuff on page 4 here. Tell us about this.
Well, yes. Now, this is kind of interesting. We're kind of predicting that as the baby boomers get closer to age 65 over the next few years, they might want to do something else, those who own small businesses. And so you're going to see a lot of businesses turning over. And I guess the advice that the experts have given us is that if you're thinking about selling your business, you can't just wake up one morning and start the process. There's a lot of things you have to do well in advance to position yourself in the business for the future.
Replace one word that you used.
Sure.
You used the word well in advance. And what you should have said was years
yeah.
in advance.
That's right.
Because we can quantify that, Joan. You need to be 3 to 5 years in advance. Because, see, Joan, the way small businesses operate their businesses financially is for their own benefit. They operate it. They operate it to maximize their own shareholder value, which is what we get to do.
Yeah.
It's part of the American dream. But you operating it for your own shareholder value may not present well to the person who wants to convert it to their shareholder value. And so you've got to start creating the kind of financial records and operating your business in such a way over a period of 3 to 5 years so that whenever someone comes in to look at your business to buy it and you hand them those records, they can take it. Now, you don't have to completely anticipate how they're going to want to look at it, but you have to be where they can be recast easily so that it makes your business look as valuable as possible
exactly, to
them, and so they'll pay you more money.
Right. That's what this is all designed to do.
That's right.
Right.
Now, this is a very important point you guys are making, Joan, because you're right about the baby boomers, and they're going to be selling more and more of these businesses. And, Joan, there is no better business to buy than one that's successful and is being run successfully by a person who wants to retire. It's the only reason they're getting out. They're not getting out because their model's bad or their
industry, yeah.
Or the way they're running it or whatever. They're getting out because they want to go do something else. They want to cash out.
Right, right.
It's a great way to get a business.
Yes.
Have you seen the commercial, though, Joan, where one guy is like, he's like 55 to 60.
Yeah.
He's selling the business, and the other guy says, "Wow, I can't believe you're selling." He says, "Yeah, I wanted to go do something else." And the guy who bought it from him was like 15 years older than him.
I didn't see this.
And he gave the same reason for wanting to buy it. So my point is, you know, some of the people who are going to be selling might be selling to somebody who's older.
It's possible. Sure.
You know, there are some 55-year-old retirees or some 60-year-old retirees who are going to leave their employee and want to go do something else. They're going to have some cash.
Folks who've been employees for all their lives and want to do something on their own.
And they're going to buy a business from somebody 5-10 years younger than them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to happen.
Right.
It's very exciting, Joan, what's happening out there in the marketplace. And another thing that you guys talk about is the franchise issues.
Well, this is kind of interesting. We're talking about ever smaller niches, and what the folks were telling me was that subspecialties are the big thing now. You know, like instead of having health clubs, you're going to have different little health clubs. Mm-hmm. And people have probably heard of Curves for Women, but there's also now there's something called Cuts for Men. But there's going to be for the over 50 crowd and the under 30 crowd, and so that's pretty exciting. But also in sort of the home remodeling, handyman service, home cleaning area, mm-hmm. you're going to have specialties down as small as, you know, leather restoration. It's just sort of interesting.
Well, we're coming back full circle, Joan.
Really?
Well, think about it. Think about the craftsmen that we had over the years.
Yeah.
Over the millennia.
Yeah.
That built up. It's what made little markets, made little towns, little shops and things like that.
Right. And you don't really want some big, huge business doing your leather restoration. You want somebody that really knows what they're doing.
Well, and you would know, Joan. You're always having your leather restored.
That's right.
Right?
Exactly.
But here's what I take away from all this, Joan.
Yeah.
Look at all the almost infinite possibilities to create an opportunity in this marketplace.
That's right.
A great country or what?
Yeah.
You know, we started out kind of dour, Joan, talking about how our politicians have let us down.
Yeah, but that's Washington.
That's Washington. America is an amazing, vibrant, dynamic, fascinating place. Our economy is the best on the planet, and it's a great place to be.
That's right.
Joan, thank you for being here. Good job.
Thank you, Jim.
And by the way, Joan, one of the reasons it's such a great place to be is because of all these great small business owners.
You bet.
And I know you agree with me. They're my heroes and yours. Got to go for this hour, folks. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'll see you tomorrow. Don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.